Okay, hey guys, once again, we are back. Episode, guess which one?
42.
We've got 10 more, and we're at our year mark. So,
right on schedule.
Yeah, and I think we've missed 2 weeks this year, 2 or 3.
Okay, not bad.
Not bad at all. I was kind of hoping to end the same way we began right there at Halloween, but that's not going to happen. We're going to be a couple of weeks past that when we finally hit our year mark. But so we started on the 27th of October. So, that's still pretty good.
Yeah.
And I am Jen, and on the phone we have...
I am Carrie.
Absolutely. And we are doing the continuation of Ragnarok, Thor Ragnarok this week. But before we get into all of that, few things that have come to attention that I want to mention. First off, rest in peace, God lover, Miss Olivia Newton-John. Dame Olivia Newton-John passed away just a couple of days ago, so God rest her, and may flights of angels wing you to your rest.
Amen. Loved Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, yeah. She was my first girl crush.
She was my second girl crush.
You don't actually have to say it's a girl crush for you.
Well, I was following your lead. She was my second crush. I have to say, you know, Grease and Xanadu.
Yes.
It was very important to my developmental
progress. Oh, please. Grease and Xanadu were, well, Grease more than Xanadu. Not a lot of people haven't seen Xanadu, but, or heard. But Grease, man, that was important to most young men your age's, developmental,
Well, you know what, and honestly, our mothers, my mom still to this day is like, Grease is the greatest movie of all time, and I'm like, Mom, first of all, you really need to get out. I mean, there are better movies, I promise.
You really need to get out more, Mom.
Wow, there are other movies. But for women of a certain age, I think that Grease really kind of hit a lot of feels, and then the family that was surrounding that particular woman that loved Grease kind of got caught up in a fever, and I remember it was a real cultural phenomenon.
It certainly was, and, you know, John Travolta being the whole good boy, bad boy in Grease really, really, really made a big deal. You know, that kind of shaped exactly who he became as an actor throughout the years.
Yeah. And from what I understand, he and Olivia Newton-John remained friends, and they would do Grease reunions. And, you know, Rocky Horror, you don't get a whole lot of, like, Barry Bostwick and Susan Sarandon showing up for those reunions. But
right. You
would very often get John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John, and there are pictures that I found online in the past week after she passed, where they do that pose that's at the end of Grease,
yep,
where they're in the convertible going off into the sunset, and they kind of reenact it.
Right.
You know, take pictures.
Yeah, I
and
saw.
And they were still smiling, and obviously, you know, it wasn't a fake kind of friendship. They were still certainly very close.
Right, and the last stage performance they actually did, where John Travolta was in the audience. And she pulled him up on stage. I don't think he was anticipating that. I really don't.
What was the song?
Was it
You're the One That I Want?
Yeah.
I can totally see it.
Yep, and because, I mean, the whole time, he did it. He got up on stage and did the song with her. But the whole time, he's got his head down, and he's, like, covering his eyes, like, oh, my God, I can't believe she did this to me.
Well, you know, he had chills, and they were multiplying.
Oh, God, don't. But yeah, so I wanted to make sure we gave her a shout out, her and her family, you know.
May she rest in peace.
Absolutely. She made a very great impact on a great many lives. So.
Oh, yeah, and not just Grease. She did some fantastic music. You know, we ended up buying a lot of her albums. You know, physical, we had that album at home.
Right.
And There are a lot of songs that she did from that era that during the LimeWire and Morpheus phases, I just had to pirate them because I had to hear them again.
Had to have them.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely.
Still got them.
Yeah, and eventually we're going to be able to drop this subject. I'd like to drop it on a certain ex-actress's head.
Okay.
But there is more news where the Depp Heard case is concerned.
You're kidding.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah, she pulled out all the stops, really. She did everything she could to ruin his name and ruin his reputation and all that kind of good stuff. They have unsealed some of the documents that, you know, were sealed before the court case that just happened starting this past April. And one of the things she claims is that Johnny was affected by erectile dysfunction. And that's one of the reasons she filed for divorce. Had nothing to do with abuse. Had to do with that he couldn't perform. You know what? Honey, child, you know, grow up, number one. Number two, if you've got the chance to be intimate with Johnny Depp, you don't care. And number three, sweetheart, that's why they have toys.
Wow.
Sorry. I mean, come on. You know, can you get any more petty and childish and juvenile than trying to bring his manhood into question for a court case? You know, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, it's kind of a cheap shot.
Yeah, cheap's her middle name. Wait, no, cheap's her first name. I mean, really, come on.
Yeah. It actually rolls off the tongue pretty well, Chief Amber Heard.
There you go. Hey. That's what I'm going to have to start. Yeah, instead of the bitch, now she's just going to be Chief Amber Heard.
Yeah, she's cheap.
And I do believe you have a little tidbit of information considering we're doing a Marvel movie today.
Oh, my God.
That's a bit interesting.
Yeah, you know, interesting and... This just blows my mind. All right, so...
Didn't believe it when you first saw it, did you?
No. No. Well, you know what? Yes, but more like no. All right, so it's come to light that Michael Jackson in the 90s wanted to purchase outright Marvel Comics. Marvel Entertainment.
He wanted to purchase the entire thing, the entire Marvel franchise.
And, you know, this was a time, and I remember these times, where Marvel was, you know, seriously considering bankruptcy. They really were.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, right there in the mid-90s. Yeah.
They were in really bad shape, but in short, Michael Jackson approached Marvel and wanted to buy it so he could play Spider-Man in a full feature film.
What?
Right. Yes.
And
yes,
he wanted purchase Marvel Enterprises. So
he was
that
interested in buying Marvel Entertainment, and he wanted to do it in collaboration with Stan Lee.
Okay.
And, you know, these were apparently serious discussions. Stan Lee ended up talking about it later in 2012.
Okay.
And he talked to MoviePhone, which is, phone spelled F-O-N-E.
Right.
You guys can check this out. Stan Lee ended up confiding and basically saying that they'd become friends. He and Michael Jackson, apparently, and I can kind of see that.
I could, too.
Getting along.
Absolutely.
And he wanted to play Spider-Man. He wanted to play Spider-Man, but apparently it was shut down by, you know, Stan Lee's not the sole owner of Marvel Comics, well, and I cannot find whether or not Stan Lee was into it or not.
Right.
I just know that it was shut down. But
thank goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Thank goodness.
Yeah, and jeez, thank goodness. And you know, a few years later, Avi Arad, who is a filmmaker and a producer, actually more accurately a producer, ended up basically kind of bailing Marvel out, and they did those first X-Men movies with Halle Berry and
right,
Hugh Jackman, and that bought them back.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It wasn't Michael Jackson. It was just, let's just make a legit
No, it was movie, Hugh Jackman.
You know?
It was right, Hugh Jackman. Right, yeah, he brought them back.
Right.
I was
the
actually...
The universe owes Hugh Jackman and Halle Berry a lot, people, just saying.
Absolutely. I was actually... I was reading a novel earlier today, and one of the characters, they were trying to teach her how to bowl, you know, like bowling,
yeah.
And said when she bowled her first strike, it would be like a thrilling moment. And he said, there's not much that tops it. She said, oh, sex with Hugh Jackman. He said, you've had sex with Hugh Jackman? And she goes, no, but I bet it would top knocking down 10 pins with one ball.
Probably better than a strike. Right.
So, yeah, I just I had to mention that. I just came across it, matter of fact, this afternoon while I was reading. So.
But, you know, I think about Michael Jackson's film stuff, and he did Captain EO with Disney, ironically.
Yeah.
He did Moonwalker. You know, he was in the film, you know, the John Landis-directed thriller, and
oh God,
Michael
yes.
Jackson had a cinematic... cinematography kind of eye.
He definitely had
was,
a cinematographic bent.
Yeah, he really did. He was interested in film along with music. That being said, all of those efforts that he did was very Michael Jackson centric. So he would have spent some cash on it. He would have practiced his ass off for a year, and it would have been Spider-Man moonwalking, and it would have likely been set to Michael Jackson music.
And it more than likely would have destroyed Marvel Comics forever.
Right.
I mean, no offense, because Michael did develop a reputation for being eccentric. You know,
and Valley Forge was apparently a little nippy that year. Yes, he does have a reputation for being eccentric. Yeah, you're right. It all turned out the way it was supposed to.
Right. And, you know, thank goodness Stan Lee and the crew held out. And we have today Thor Ragnarok.
And we have one of the top five movie franchises in all of history.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is up there with the Star Wars films.
Oh, well, that does not surprise me, because after the first three, Star Wars kind of went downhill. But we're not even going to start talking about that particular subject.
Babe, don't get me started. But yeah.
All right, so we're ready to get into this.
Let's do it.
Or should I say get back
into it. Let's talk about some really good Marvel Cinematic Universe that actually happened.
Okay, so we're going to go... I'm going to go through the cast list right quick-like.
Okay.
Since we are revisiting... this, and we've got Chris Hemsworth, of course, as Thor. Tom Hiddleston as Loki. Kate Blanchett as Hela. Mark Ruffalo, Bruce Banner and the Hulk. Idris Elba, of course, as Heimdall. Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie. Anthony Hopkins as Odin. Jeff Goldblum as the Grand Master. Carl Urban as Scourge.
Yep.
You've got, was Agent Coulson in this one? I don't think so. All right.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you've got Ray Stevenson as Volstagg, Zachary Levi as Fandral, and, I hate trying to pronounce his name. Asano as Hogan.
Oh, I was going to go, you know, Taika Waititi.
I hate pronouncing his name too, but
yeah,
the director.
Korg, and he was also the director.
Absolutely, and yes, he was Korg. So that's the basic rundown. And speaking of the cast, let me find it.
Oh, wow. They actually also had Matt Damon and Sam Neill.
Sam Neill, Matt Damon, and there was one other. It was a big name.
You had Clancy Brown. He was Surtur. You had Zachary Levi, who is going to, again, be Shazam, Captain Marvel.
Right.
In the new Captain Marvel movie. He was Fandral. Benedict Cumberbatch was in it. You know, you can't forget the Doctor Strange appearance.
Oh, the very end. You're right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Lots of big names.
Yeah. Speaking of the big names, this movie actually breaks Spider-Man Homecoming's record for the most Oscar winners featured in one MCU movie.
Wow. Okay. Whoa. Wow.
Yep.
That's a major feat.
Cate Blanchett, Sir Anthony Hopkins, Matt Damon, and pronounce his name.
Taika Waititi?
Yes. Taika. Okay. Taika Waititi. They are the actors that are the Oscar winners, and then you add in Benedict Cumberbatch, Jeff Goldblum, and Mark Ruffalo with their Oscar nominations. Yeah, huge cast.
If you put all these stars together and press them, they would make a black hole.
Oh, God.
That's a lot of star power.
Hey, now, do you remember last time we talked about Throg? The Frog of Thunder?
Yeah.
Okay, the story was created by Walter Simonson. Now, there's another scene that is also from a Walter Simonson story. And that's where Thor goes to force Loki to show himself as Loki instead of Odin.
Right.
By throwing the hammer and then grabbing the back of Loki's head with his hammer hand. Because nothing stops the hammer from returning to Thor's hand. So that is actually from a Simonson storyline where Loki had put Thor under a love spell. And Thor was trying to make him remove it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. There's lots and lots and lots of references back to the comic books.
Yeah, well, you know, Walt Simonson was a long time and very successful comic book writer in his own right. He's done a lot of work, and he really, really defined Thor in the 80s and 90s. And very important when we talk about lore, you know, the lore for Thor and Loki.
Right.
You've got to mention Walt Simonson.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like mentioning Chris Claremont with the X-Men, or, well, geez, a lot of people, particularly Stan Lee.
Stan Lee with Marvel.
You know, with Spider-Man, people like that. Walt Simonson and them, you know, developing some of his stories and putting them on the screen. I really hope that Simonson was paid a great deal of money.
He deserves
it. Because these guys did not make a whole lot of money back in the day, guys.
Oh, no, uh-uh. No, I mean,
comic book writers.
Comic book writing was about the same, was actually less well paid than commercial writing.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
and
it
that's
was more like school teachers.
Basically, yeah, and that's sad, you know, people that write those little 30-second jingles you hear on the TV all the time.
Yeah.
They got paid a hell of a lot more than your comic book writers.
Right. They did.
Yep.
You're so right.
Yep. So, yeah, let's hope the man got paid big time for the mention of his storylines in the various movies, because it's not just Ragnarok. There's several of his storylines mentioned in the other Thor movies as well.
I think that he created the Destroyer.
Right.
From the first movie, you know. I don't know. He's very important to the lore. I'm really glad that you mentioned Walt Simonson.
Absolutely. But, yeah. Oh, and one of my favorite quotes from Tom Hiddleston. He's talking about how Loki might have spent his time between the Dark World and Ragnarok, which, of course, he is now pretending to be Odin. So, Tom says, quote, Loki has devoted most of his efforts to narcissistic self-glorification, not so much on good governance. Loki has always tested the limits of his power and the boundaries placed upon him. He doesn't just stick his finger in the electrical plug socket, he burns the house down. And now, he has to deal with his consequences.
Right.
So yeah, I love that, because that's Loki up on site. He does not just stick his finger in the electrical socket, he burns the house down.
Right.
That is classic Loki.
I've always appreciated how Hiddleston made Loki sort of that godchild.
Right.
You know, he was kind of, in a way, a selfish...
He was a toddler.
Possibly destructive child.
He was a toddler.
Yeah.
Toddlers are always very selfish and destructive. Trust me on this one.
What was it? Very, very sad. Well, anyway... you know, that he did in Loki, the series.
Right. Well, you know, in the first movie, in the original Thor... Loki's age translates, because, you know, yes, he's close to 1,000 years old, but translated to human age, he's only about 17 in the first movie.
Huh.
So that gives you a little bit better idea of why he acts and reacts the way that he does, is because, yes, he's bordering on adulthood, but he's not there yet, and he can't be expected to think like an adult.
As a god.
Right. But, I mean, still.
Actually, that's a really fantastic revelation and perspective. Wow.
Right. Yeah, he's... And, you know, right after, and then in Dark World, which is the only movie he doesn't screw anybody over, which is why I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he has to deal with being imprisoned. He has to deal with his mother's death. He has to deal with basically the only person who ever truly just 100% cared about him completely. You know, he has to deal with her death. You know, and the only deception there is from him is at the very end when he comes back as Odin. So,
wow. That's a very important, interesting revelation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I thought Hiddleston was amazing at, you know, he was 30 when they filmed, 30, around about 29, 30, when they filmed the original Thor. And,
wow.
And he looks like a child. He looks like a burgeoning teenager.
Well, you know, he has that face that makes me, you know, you can do like almost a 15-year expanse, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
25, maybe he's, you know, 35.
Right. Right. And, you know, he's just, it's gotten better and better. And, I mean, he made the comment at one point, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, so this is not an exact quote, but talking about doing the last, Endgame? The last movie
that he actually did
as Loki. But he said he was kind of worried about it, you know, because it had been a couple of years. But he put on the outfit and put on the wig, and the voice came naturally, and just it was like greeting an old friend and just saying, hey, how you doing?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, we know he can't be Loki forever. We know he's going to have to expand and do his own thing and go his own way. But,
Right. Man,
he will always, always be remembered as Loki.
As a lot of people kind of consider Sean Connery always the quintessential Bond.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
You know, you're going to have a really high bar of people that are, you know, possibly going to replace him to be Loki.
Oh, right.
Good luck to you, son.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you. Oh, you got those pictures I sent? Well, he would make a fantastic pirate, would he not?
He would make a great pirate.
And, you know, with Disney being assholes and, you know, trying to replace Depp as Captain Jack Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
Where
are you going with this?
I could see Hiddleston taking that role.
I could see Hiddleston taking that role. I agree.
And I mean,
and,
hey,
you know, if anything, it would be a challenge for him, but I think he could pull it off.
I think people would be more accepting because it's not just me. It is not just me that has the Depp Hiddleston thing going on. I am not the only one. I was watching TikTok the other day, and a little thing came on about how your past comfort character talks to your present comfort character. And it's Loki going, or it's Captain Jack Sparrow going, "Hey, man, how's she doing?" And Loki's going, "Dude, she's insane. Take her back."
I think you need to send that to me in a link. B, I think you need to post that on the... That's awesome. You need to post that on the blog.
If I can find it again, I will certainly do that. But yeah, I'm like, yep, I was like, dude, they're talking about me.
Yeah.
You know, of course, then my paranoid side pipes up and goes, how do they know that? I'm kidding, guys. I'm kidding. Not really.
In a way, I kind of see Hiddleston, and when we watched Crimson Peak,
yes,
I kind of had a revelation where, you know, I know him as Loki.
Right.
Because that's how I was exposed to him.
That's how you were introduced to him.
Viewer. But, you know, you hear about people saying Johnny Depp basically is incredibly successful because all of his characters are an extension of Johnny Depp.
Right. And he said that himself.
I can kind of see that with Hiddleston. He's a refined but charismatic but youthfully energetic English person.
Right.
And if he were to do a pirate role, that would be a real separation, let's face it. And you know what, Jen? I really think he could pull it off.
I know he could.
Yes, absolutely. You know he could. And I think that I think that Disney would be smart to offer him that if they're going to continue to be dicks.
If they're going to continue to be dicks and continue to keep Johnny away from the Pirates franchise, then they are going to need a new leading person. They discussed Margot Robbie for a while, taking over becoming the new captain.
Which they have really anchored a lot of their income on. The Pirates of the Caribbean ride, that's Johnny Depp now. They've actually
put
in Captain Jack Sparrow, and that ride is incredibly popular. And if you guys want to disavow Johnny Depp, you're going to have to find an actor
who is
fill that role
at least equal to him.
I can't think of anybody,
except
Hiddleston is a great fit.
Yeah. Yeah, anybody who has seen the still shots or even possibly seen the Hollow Crown, you guys know what I'm talking about in that red leather jacket and with his sword flailing. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He'd make a perfect pirate.
Yeah, you've got to put that on the blog because that was actually really, really great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see it. I really did not think it great pirate
until I sent you those shots.
And now I am completely convinced that he can own this.
Oh yes he could. All right, let's get back to Thor.
Right.
Of course, this is all about Hiddleston, so
yeah.
But yeah, okay, so in the Grandmaster's viewing room, now we've already discussed in his master room all the statues and stuff, right?
Yes,
we did that couple weeks ago. In the Grandmaster's viewing room, there it is decorated with Jack Kirby artwork.
Yes.
If you pay attention. And it's artwork that comes specifically from the Marvel comic Fantastic Four, number 64, which was originally issued July 1967.
Total nerdgasm. I remember distinctly.
Yep. Oh, you want nerdgasm? Here we go. This is for all the Jeff Goldblum fans, which I am one, and I didn't realize this, so shame on me. During the introduction scene, the Grandmaster is playing some sort of synthesizer type, keyboard type musical instrument.
Yep.
Okay, Goldblum actually is a very accomplished pianist. He has a jazz combo called Jeff Goldblum and the, okay, I can't read my writing.
It's like the guys in the group, right?
I'm going to have to look this up. Jeff Goldblum and the Mildred Schmitzer Orchestra. And they play the Rockwell in L.A., California pretty regularly. So, you ever go to California, you ever go to L.A., hit the Rockwell, see if you can catch Jeff Goldblum.
That'd be amazing.
But, yeah, so yes, he's definitely a pianist. Sorry, I love Goldblum. He's been one of my heroes for years and years and years.
National treasure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and what I love is, you mentioned Sam Neill earlier.
Yeah.
Okay, you've got Sam Neill, you've got Jeff Goldblum, and one missing character that does not show up in this one, Nick Fury. Samuel L. Jackson, that also starred in I believe it was 93 movie, Jurassic Park.
That's right, in the first one.
Yep.
That's right.
The original Jurassic Park.
He was a video technician, that's right.
Yep. Jeff Goldblum was, of course, Ian Malcolm. Samuel L. Jackson was the computer tech.
Yep, smoking cigarettes.
And Sam Neill was the hero of the story. He was the dinosaur expert.
Yeah, these guys have all worked together extensively.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's a very small community. You're not going to find many actors that have not worked together at some point. Except, of course, for Tom Hiddleston and Johnny Depp. So, I'm waiting on that one. It's coming. It's coming.
And I cannot wait for the day where we can definitively tie by 1 or 2 degrees of separation Johnny Depp and the Marvel Universe.
Oh, God, yes. Something's got to give. Johnny, we need you in the Marvel Universe, dude.
Well, that being said, it's Disney.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, I know. Oh, another really weird coincidence. Which, I'm all about the weird coincidences. I tend to, you know, it's kind of my stock. I kind of love it. But I was looking in one of Johnny's new projects that he's coming out with. Is titled Jeanne de Berry. Now, when I first started this podcast, I created a Facebook page specifically to host the group that I started, Debheads and Hiddlestoners. The name of that page is Jeanne Berry. So go figure. I thought that was really cool.
That is weird, actually.
Yeah.
And what is this project? Just very quickly, is it a movie?
It is a movie, and it is the reason that he's been seen around with the little redhead. She's the one teaching him French.
Okay, so more of a professional thing.
Yeah, okay. Have you seen this little redhead?
Oh, come on.
Yeah, definitely be very hard to keep it professional. She's so cute.
Oh, damn it.
Look it up. Just look up Johnny Depp redhead. It'll pop
Johnny
right up.
Johnny Depp is still a human. Just saying. Anyway.
But yeah, when I was first told that she was teaching him French, I said, yeah, there's quite a few French words I could teach him, you know. French kiss, French tickler.
Oh my God, French tickler.
But anyway, there we go back to the first part of the show. Moving on.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. This is actually the highest billing as far as, like, order that the stars are presented in, like, on your credits. Highest billing for both Tom Hiddleston and Idris Elba. To that particular date. Ironically, both have more screen time in the previous films. Once again, more irony. Gotta love it.
Well, you know, it was an important movie when it comes down to us talking about the MCU.
Well, and the dynamics between... the dynamics between Thor and Loki and Heimdall played a major important part. You know, even though he did not get that much screen time in this movie, his part was incredibly, incredibly important. So...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's the one who hid the sword from Hela.
Well, this is the movie where we really do see Asgard getting completely destroyed.
Right, right. But see, you don't expect that.
No, and you don't. And we also see, and, you know, Jin?
Yes.
I want to throw this out, and I've kind of realized it. This is the movie where Loki, or Hiddleston's character Loki, steals the Tesseract. And this is where a lot of things in the larger MCU go into motion.
No.
He ended up entering the vault.
Yes, but... this never happened, because when you go back in time, he actually steals the Tesseract at the end of Avengers.
Well, okay, so... well, you can interpret it as... okay, so now we're splitting into different timelines.
But now, it is where he steals the Tesseract and gives it to Thanos. Yes.
You know, this is before we really ended up going into, like, Infinity War.
And the multiverse.
And when I first saw this movie, I was like, oh my God. You know, Loki being an incredibly important character in this movie, you know, and it, like I said, it's before, you know, the larger...
But yeah, you are right. This is where he ends up swiping the Tesseract before Asgard is destroyed. Which, in turn, of course, he turns around and gives it to Thanos.
Because
Thor's like, we don't have the Tesseract. It was destroyed on Asgard. And Loki's like, actually, you are the worst, brother.
Well, it seems like these individual Marvel movies, like the Thor movies, the Iron Man movies, the Captain America movies, kind of the plot points get established and they move here, and then the Avengers movies is where they have to deal with it.
Right.
It seems like Thor Ragnarok was where we really start getting, like, into the depths of what's going to happen. And you know what? In the Avengers movies, they deliver. They're like, you know what? You were right. What you observed, that right. was a big deal.
Yeah, it certainly was. But yeah, you are right. You are absolutely right. That is where he stole the Tesseract in this timeline.
In this timeline, right.
But yeah. Now, Tessa Thompson. That's another one you don't hear a whole lot about, but she is absolutely fantastic. Her playing Valkyrie, she was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I
love her anyway.
Oh, yeah. So cute.
Just because of the Westworld stuff.
Okay. But yeah, she actually based her performance as Valkyrie on Sarah Connor in Terminator 2.
But drunk.
But drunk. Well, Sarah really did. Oh, Sarah was drinking too when they went down south. When they got to Mexico.
Oh my. Whoa. Oh, whoa. I forgot about that. You were showing your nerd card right now.
Yes, I am a total geek.
Wow, I forgot about that. That's right. Yeah, she did use alcohol to kind of fuel her...
her rage.
Right. Ooh, interesting. Great point.
Yeah. Yep. And this is also the first movie that Waititi directed but did not write. Every other movie before this that he actually directed, he wrote it as well.
Hey, listen, very quick. Tessa Thompson did base her performance off the Sarah Connor from the...
From the second Terminator, yes.
Oh my god, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she absolutely did.
It's very clear.
Made it a point in a couple of different interviews to make that link there.
Wow. Anyways.
But yeah, she is an absolutely brilliant actress. I hope we see a lot more of her.
Yeah.
Not just in the MCU, but you know, elsewhere. I think she's great. I think you know. She's doing what she should be doing, and we want to see her do more of it.
She's apparently killing it in Westworld, and am I mistaken? But did she do the reboot of Men in Black with Chris Hemsworth?
Wait.
That is her and Hemsworth, right?
I do not know. I have not checked that out.
Yeah, the new... Yeah. It was the two of them.
Huh. Okay. That makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, she worked with him in Ragnarok. I could definitely see her wanting to work with him again because from what I hear, he is like one of the most easygoing actors. I've not heard... He's kind of like Johnny Depp in that way. Chris Hemsworth is. I've not heard anyone say that he was difficult to work with. That, you know, that there was a problem or that, you know, that he caused issues. I've never heard, not another actor, not a cast member, not a crew member, a director, producer, anyone make any complaints about Hemsworth. So
they did, in 2019, do a reboot of Men in Black. It was Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth.
Nice. I'm going to have to give that one a look-see. Is that available to watch?
I don't know. But yeah, like you said, apparently Chris Hemsworth's like, yeah, I like you. I'll work with you.
No, Chris Hemsworth, from what I hear, likes everybody. I mean, and I'm not trying to down the man. I mean, he's an amazing actor, but apparently he can get along with basically anybody.
Yeah.
So, and that's definitely a good trait to have. So.
Well, his relationship with Tom is always been noteworthy.
Definitely. Well, I mean, it's been special from the very first Thor. Tom still to this day will state that Hemsworth is the actor that he would prefer to act with. He says he's stated many times that Chris makes me a better actor.
Wow.
Yup.
Well, here's to that relationship. They really do. They have fantastic chemistry.
Well, and they're also close offset. They developed a friendship during the first filming of the first movie, and they've maintained that friendship, so.
Yeah. I see them definitely being able to visit the house.
Oh, yeah. Boy, that's... Oh, yeah. We don't want to even think about that one.
What?
Chris Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston?
But I'm talking about, like, visiting the house and, like, hanging out and watching some...
Yeah, but I'm female, so I don't think that way.
Oh, my God.
He finally gets it.
By Odin. Asgard. You went there.
Oh, come on. I always go there. I'd like to go there. See, that's the point.
I think that, you know, by... and, you know, let me tie in a little bit of this kind of towards the end. I think by the time we got to Ragnarok, the shipping between Thor and Loki was pretty complete.
Oh, God. Yeah, we don't want to ship Thor and Loki. Number one, they're brothers, guys. Come on.
Well, apparently... like, ship Thor, and it's all Loki, but, and I'm like, guys, Natalie Portman was it.
Loki, that's what I keep hearing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Loki, and not even in close second, but very hot, you know, Hela.
Yeah, and they're all supposedly related, but seriously.
Yeah, they're like cousins, you know, or what have you.
But think about it. Okay, you've got Hela, who loves dark green and black. She's got black hair. She's pale-skinned. She's blue-eyed. You have Loki, who likes green and black. He's pale-skinned, dark-headed, green-eyed. And then you have Thor.
Right.
Who wears red. He's blonde. He's both Hela and Loki are very slight. They're well-muscled, but they're not bulky. And then have
the Australian surfer god.
Okay, so, which one is adopted again?
I guess that helps make the ships more convenient.
Yeah, tell me. Oh, yeah. Oh.
You know, Kate Blanchett, before we split, fantastic.
Oh, yes. And she was incredible as Hela.
Oh,
here's another Loki fact for you. You know when they're on the bridge and Loki does that really cool knife flip?
Yeah.
You know, and like he's not even paying attention. He just flips both daggers and catches them and continues to fight.
Yeah.
That's
real.
That was Hiddleston. And it was completely accidental.
Yes. Oh! They're like, no, keep it.
No, he was, they were still, the cameras were still rolling, and he says, quote, he didn't want to be, quote, standing around like a lemon. So he flipped the knives and happened to catch them. They got it on film, and they used it.
Awesome.
Yep, so it was completely accidental, but it was 100% Tom Hiddleston.
And so 100% Loki.
Oh, yes. And exactly. Got a mischief. There you go.
Yep. You cannot find a better actor to be a Loki.
But, you know, as fun and as kind of lighthearted as this movie was, you know, for the most part, on the surface, Thor actually loses frigging a lot during this movie. He loses his father.
Yeah.
He loses his hammer. He loses Asgard. He loses his throne, his eye, his hair, and his girlfriend. All in one movie. So, you know, lighthearted as it was extremely, extremely deep at some points.
They really did the balance.
Yeah, because, I mean, you gotta lose sometimes, you know, which he had not done up until this point, except for losing his mother like Loki did.
Well, you know, and I wish that they could do the formula for other franchises like Bond or Star Wars or whatever. They kept it light,
right?
But they also kept it deep.
Right.
And, you know, these were significant things. This was a good film.
It definitely was.
And people kind of overlook it, that being said, for these other major franchises, they wish that they could do what Ragnarok did. And so, honestly, ma'am, you know, Dark World, Ragnarok, I really respect these two movies.
Absolutely. And now we've still got about 10 minutes or so left, so I've got a bunch of... degrees of separation between the different actors. I found quite a few. I did. Valkyrie, in the comic books, she rides a Pegasus named Aragorn. Name sound okay. familiar? Aragorn.
Aragorn. Is that a Lord of the Rings thing?
Aragorn is the major hero, or a major hero, in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where Cate Blanchett and Carl Urban play Aragorn's allies, Galadriel and Eomer.
Actually, I will tie some additional. Liv Tyler was also in the Lord of the Rings trilogy and was in the Eric Bana, I think, Hulk film.
Ah, you're right. Absolutely. Nice. And let's see, I've got a few more. Let's see. This is the only franchise in the MCU to have a different director for each movie.
Oh,
2011, Thor, the original Thor was Kenneth Branagh. Thor Dark World. Yes.
Kenneth Branagh.
Yes.
Directed.
Thor.
Thor.
He also directed Crimson Peak.
What?
I believe it was him.
Blowing my mind twice.
I believe it was him that directed. I know he directed another movie that Hiddleston was in. I think it was Crimson Peak.
Sir Kenneth Branagh.
No, it wasn't Crimson Peak. I take that back. I don't have those notes in front of me. I'll have to look it up.
You've got some big notes because that guy's done.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of movies, and let's face it, it's going to connect to the Marvel Universe.
So. Absolutely. But yeah, and then Alan Taylor directed Dark World. And then, of course, Waititi directed this one, Ragnarok. Let's see. In the early 90s, Hulk writer Peter David was asked who he would like to see play Hulk if it ever became a big screen feature film. Guess what his response was?
First of all, a little background, just like we talked about Simonson
right.
being the definitive Thor kind of writer in the comic books.
Peter David is
the Hulk?
Yes. Yes,
he is.
Oh
my God, babe. Peter David once.
So, guess who he named as who he would like to see play the Hulk?
Who?
Kenneth Branagh.
What?
Yep. And he, of course, is the one who directed the original Thor movie.
Hmm.
Oh, here's another little tidbit, and I'm surprised you didn't pick up on this, Mr. Football Fan.
Okay.
Okay, now...
How about yourself?
Now, Scourge, his two guns that he picked up in Texas,
mm-hmm.
he named them...
right.
He named them Dez and Troy. Now, everybody thinks it's because they destroy. No. Two of the most popular Dallas Cowboys football players are Dez Bryant and Troy Aikman.
Troy Aikman, yep. Yeah, okay.
Dez okay. and Troy.
Okay. Okay. Who made that decision?
I do not know. Oh, yeah, and I was right. It's Jurassic Park was a 1993 release. Because I was kind of in about that one, but yeah, it's a 93 release. Let's see. Another separation here. The Grandmaster causes a rival's body to be liquefied. You remember when he hits him with the stick?
That's right.
In 1986's The Fly, Goldblum's character vomits on a rival's hand and forces it to liquefy. Carl Urban and Matt Damon also both appear in 2004's The Bourne Supremacy.
Huh.
And here's another one. Here's one that goes way back, like to 1968. Anthony Hopkins' first film ever was 1968's The Lion in Winter. in which he plays the son of Katharine Hepburn's character. Cate Blanchett plays Hepburn in 2004's The Aviator.
Holy shit, with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yep.
Wow.
All right, here's another one. Cate Blanchett appeared in 1998's British drama Elizabeth with Christopher Eccleston, who played Malekith, and Richard Attenborough, who was in Jurassic Park with Samuel L. Jackson, Sam Neill, and Jeff Goldblum.
You're killing me. Holy crap.
He also directed Chaplin, 1992 film, which featured
Robert Downey Jr.
And Marissa Tomei.
Amazing.
Yep. Matt Damon plays the stage actor Loki in The Sacrifice of Loki of Asgard. He also played an archangel named Loki in 1999's Dogma.
Yep, Dogma, right? I was going to say the Clerks, kind of, yeah, Kevin Smith. Right. Do you know who played God?
Yes, Alanis Morissette.
What?
Hell yeah!
Girl, you're good at this.
You're damn right. God is a woman. Get over it. Scourge's Last Stand is actually taken from one of the comics.
Which one?
It's taken from Thor number 362 that was released December 1985. He fends off Hela's army at the cost of his own life to save Thor and his friends.
Wow.
Yep. And, isn't it ironic? And I think this is perfect to be the last fact of the evening. Thor is the god of thunder and is constantly being shocked and electrocuted. Loki, the god of mischief, is constantly being tricked. And Hela, the goddess of death, dies.
Nice wrap up, boys.
Absolutely. So,
nice wrap up.
So, I think we can put this one to bed. So we won't be doing a lamb chop version of this next week or next couple of weeks. Yeah.
I really think that I have a better appreciation of Thor Ragnarok after this.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and the actors and actresses behind it.
Yeah.
Because they are some incredible, incredible people. And once again, I'm not going to jump all the way up on my soapbox, but I'm gonna step up just a little. Guys, these are just people. You see them on the streets. You're lucky enough to run into one of these guys. Say hi. Get a selfie. Get an autograph. Don't be an idiot. Don't act like they owe you, because they don't.
Right.
And that's all the soapboxing I'm going to do today. But yeah, so next week is a death week, and we have so many to choose from. If I can find it, what I would love to do is to do a show on the astronaut's wife.
Whoa. Ooh.
That is one of the sexiest roles Johnny Depp has ever played, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it is hot and intense and wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think that you want to hear this episode.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my goodness, I watched this the first, I saw it the first time about 2 years ago, maybe three.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah, it hadn't been that long. But, you know, I've kind of been out of touch before then. No cable, no Wi-Fi, none of that, so. So, you know, and, you know, when you live like that for a couple of 3-5 years, yeah, you kind of get used to it. But,
yeah,
trying to catch up on all my movies. The Astronaut's Wife, he plays opposite Charlize Theron, I believe.
Oh, what kept I hope it's chemistry. Oh, well, wait a minute. Man. He was opposite her in Devil's Advocate, right?
Yes. No, oh, wait, that sorry. Was Keanu that was Reeves. Keanu. Oh my
Gianna.
God! I cannot believe you. And you had me thinking it there for a minute. Yeah, but yes, she was the wife in Devil's Advocate. Yes.
Sorry,
although you have to.
Well, we switch over to Charlize Theron if I had my own podcast. It would have her.
She is a complete babe.
Yep.
Absolutely,
and she's a cool babe.
Oh, and she's one of those. She ranks right up there with Cher, Madonna, friggin', you know, these women do not age.
The iconic women that do not age?
They don't age. I mean, I sat there and I was just kind of surfing a little bit and ran across Cher's Turn Back Time video. And I'm like, okay, now I am officially sick because she was 50 plus. When she did that video. She was 50 plus when she did that video. And I couldn't have done that video at 40.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible, incredible women, incredible bodies, incredible plastic surgeons, but you know.
A lot of it's dietary, and unfortunately, I do not have the discipline.
Oh, me either. Come on.
Right.
Yeah, I'm on a seafood diet. If I see food, I eat it.
You eat it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Babe, you're Southern.
Yes, which means I love it deep fried and covered in chocolate.
Well, the food that you see is pretty good food.
Oh, damn right.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you are in Europe, or if you're in anywhere besides the Southeast, got the best food.
Southeast USA, guys. Come come find you a good home cooking diner. I'm telling you.
This is why Tom Hiddleston was not unhappy about being confined to Atlanta.
No kidding, right? For over a year. Oh, yeah.
Compared to the English cooking up, and he was like, no, this is fine.
Oh, no. One of my favorite quotes from Tom Hiddleston, I know I say that a lot, but this one is really good. He was once asked what his guilty pleasures were. He says, I don't have any. I never feel guilty about pleasure.
Well said, sir.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we are going to have to wrap it up. We're getting past an hour here. And so, next week, we will be doing a Johnny Depp episode. Hopefully, if I can find it, we'll be doing The Astronaut's Wife. If not, we'll find something as interesting to do. So, it's Johnny Depp. It's going to be interesting. We all know that.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you can find us at deppheadsandhiddlestoners@yahoo.com. That's our email. Send us some info. Tell us what you like, what you don't like. What you want to hear, what you want to see, you know, what you want to hear us talk about. Also, you can find us on Facebook, Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners Group. You can find us on Insta, Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners. And you can find us on the blog, which is deppheadshiddlestoners.com. Or you can go through our benefactor's webpage, barryreese.net, and hit the link. Am I missing anything?
No, that's it, for sure.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up this week, and we will be back next week, hopefully. As my mom used to say, God willing and the creek don't rise, we'll be here.
Peace and love.
Absolutely. Peace out, guys. If you can't be good at it. Bye.
Bye.